Hello, this is Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, December 19th, 2019. Parking on U of I campus, in a tough spot right now. Get used to it, spaces are limited during 2 years of construction. Finding a place to park in Central Campus is never a sure thing, but a spate of construction has made it an even bigger challenge lately. To put it bluntly, there is none, said Stacy DiLorenzo, Transportation Coordinator for the University of Illinois Facilities and Services. Welcome to the world for the next 2 years. Construction of a new high-rise at 6th and Daniel Street has closed one U of I lot entirely and eaten up several metered spaces along 6th Street. Meanwhile, parking is prohibited at a few dozen city meters along 6th and John Streets to make way for truck traffic and create new loading zones for businesses, she said. DiLorenzo is the university's liaison to the new hub on campus project going up at 6th and Daniel Street. It's a private development, but the university plans to rent 3 floors to house several U of I offices or departments. The new 13-story building will extend close to the Swanland Administration Building at 6th and John, eating up about 18 parking spaces in a small lot south of Swanland, she said. The campus had to build a new temporary loading dock behind the Illini Union Bookstore, as delivery trucks formerly used that lot to get in and out, she said. And because the semi-trailer trucks need a wide berth, the campus decided to temporarily close 60 parking spaces in an adjoining lot around Swanland, aside from a few reserved for handicapped parking, she said. Parking is also prohibited at city meters along John Street between Wright and 6th to give the semis room as they enter and exit the parking lot, she said. In all, she estimated about 45 meters along John and 6th are out of commission. U of I employees who used to park behind Swanland have been relocated to the parking garage across 6th Street. She said only about 10 people were displaced, including the chancellor, provost, and vice chancellors. The rest of the spaces in that lot were public meters. Visitors who formerly used street meters in the area are now filling up public meters inside that parking garage, she said. We do have complaints that there's no parking. We have people who try to come and park in the lot that was closed, where the temporary loading dock is, she said. They're not happy with it, but it's unfortunately what we're dealing with right now. It's likely to be that way until summer or fall 2021, when the new hub tower is set to open, she said. And immediately after that, the campus plans to close down 2 parking garages in the area for renovation, she said. The tower going up at 6th and Green Streets, the Dean, is scheduled to open in fall 2020. The parking issues are mostly south of Green Street Business District, and merchants haven't reported too many problems, said Veronica Saravini, marketing director for the Champaign Center Partnership. Parking is definitely a challenge, but it's available, said Donna Walthall, owner of Apricot Lane Clothing Store. You have to search for it. Walthall worries that the parking challenges will deter residents from coming to campus, but she said there are usually spaces in the garage behind the Marriott Hotel at 6th and Green and metered parking north of Green Street. I encourage townspeople to come down, especially when the students are gone. Parking definitely eases up a little bit, Walthall said. Some of the bagged street meters that are off-limits to the public are being used by construction workers, but other spaces are temporary loading zones to replace several eliminated by ongoing construction on 6th and Daniel, she said. The hub will rise 13 stories, with the first 2 floors dedicated to retail and parking, both for residents and the public, she said. The U of I will rent the 3rd, 4th, and 5th floors, and the remaining levels will be apartments. The building is also supposed to include an underground loading dock for the bookstore, she said. Demolition, asbestos removal, and other prep work has been underway for several weeks, but construction won't start until after the new year, she said. Meanwhile, the MCOR work on Wright Street is nearly wrapped up, though the southbound lane is still blocked off. DiLorenzo is awaiting the results of the strength tests on the concrete on that side of the street. She hopes temperatures will rise above freezing before the end of December, so crews can paint lane markings on the pavement. We hope to have Wright Street fully open by the new year, but it's weather dependent. Noisy CAM's demolition halted for finals this week. Shh! No wrecking balls. It's finals week. The demolition of CAMS was postponed last week so as not to disturb University of Illinois students preparing for finals. There's a policy on campus that there can't be any noisy construction going on during reading night or finals, which run through Friday, said Stacy DiLorenzo, transportation coordinator for U of I Facilities and Services. The contractor working on the new hub on campus project at 6th and Daniel Streets planned to raise CAMS on Thursday, also reading day, when students are given a day off from classes to prepare for finals, until DiLorenzo stepped in. I told him they couldn't demo CAMS this week, she said. They can do whatever they want after Friday. The contractor, Wisconsin-based J.H. Findorf and Son, is going to wait until next week or after Christmas, she said. Meanwhile, quieter work continued Wednesday on the site, where trucks were delivering materials and crews were installing vibration sensors at the nearby Illini Union bookstore to record any impact from construction. They just can't be doing any demo or jackhammering concrete, she said. Top of the morning, something to get you going today, courtesy of Jim Rosso. Thanks to the fedora he wore into school Wednesday morning, Phil Weber was able to hide his surprise. Then the first hour bell rang, and eighth graders started to filter into his Urbana Middle School classroom. What followed was a lot of pointing, a lot of laughing, Weber said. It's a different look. Egged on by students and motivated by a good cause, Weber dyed his hair a pinkish orange ahead of today's all-school assembly, where he will join eight other staffers in getting their heads shaved. It was their promise that the school met a fundraising goal of $1,200 for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. The total is up to $1,350. Student Council ran with the idea, soliciting donations at basketball tournaments, lunch hour, and last Friday at school, where students chipped in a dollar for the chance to wear hats in class. In his first year at UMS, Weber has gone to the crazy hair route at three school districts, Champaign and Danville, since his son David died in 2008. In that span, he's helped raise more than $10,000 for the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. It's a way to make something positive out of it and to keep David's memory alive, Weber said. The kids dig it, too. They see me in a different light, not the strict, mean teacher they sometimes think of me as, he said. I can be goofy, too. Public input sought on Wellness Center. Several University of Illinois faculty members who are part of a new Communiversity Think and Do Tank want the public's help in designing a wellness center inside Lincoln Square Mall. The project is also part of a larger STEM Illinois initiative designed to encourage young people in the community and their parents to get involved in science, technology, engineering, and math. Connecting those efforts is Ruby Mendenhall, Professor of Sociology and African American Studies, and Assistant Dean for Diversity and Democratization of Health Initiative of Health Innovation at the Carl Illinois College of Medicine. She said organizers of the Think and Do Tank want to bring the university and community together to talk about social issues and what we would like to build on, and the Wellness Center is one aspect. Parents who want to give their children access to resources and STEM education might need support themselves, she said. When the parents are stressed and worried about other things, it may be hard for them to focus, she said. The Wellness Center could include meditation classes, dance classes, or a resource board where people can get information on jobs or wellness services. I would love a space that is beautiful and calming, and when you go in there, there is a sense of community, Mendenhall said. An informal meeting about the Wellness Center is scheduled for 6 to 8 p.m. today at the food court inside the Lincoln Square. Mendenhall hopes to get initial input today and host a more formal planning session next semester. The STEM Illinois Initiative, funded by the Chancellor's Office, is modeled after a similar effort in New Orleans by Calvin Mackey, a former Tulane University engineering professor and entrepreneur. Mackey founded the nonprofit group STEM NOLA to engage students in science, engineering, and math. Every second Saturday, he opens up a gym and invites students and parents to work with a drone, see how a cow's heart pumps, or hear NASA engineers talk about building the next rocket, Mendenhall said. The goal is to get young people excited about STEM, especially African Americans who are underrepresented in those fields, she said. The U of I plans to adopt that model with Mackey's help and host a STEM Fest next spring, followed by a series of STEM Saturdays, she said. The U of I Music lecturer Will Patterson and Malaika McKee, visiting assistant professor of African American Studies, are also involved in the project. State AG warns of holiday sales scheme. In CU, group rate is the better option. Beware of alternative retail energy suppliers offering deals that sound just too good to be true. Local and state authorities are cautioning. In a warning Wednesday, State Attorney General Kwame Raoul said these private for-profit companies selling electricity and natural gas have been out marketing in and around stores where holiday shoppers are rushing around trying to finish buying their gifts. As people rush to purchase last-minute holiday gifts, they should also be wary of energy suppliers that set up in busy retail spaces to entice customers with false claims of free energy and deceptive reward benefits, he said. Raoul also urged retailers to protect their customers by keeping alternative retail energy supply marketers from selling inside or outside their stores. Scott Tess, Urbana's environmental sustainability manager, said the city has also been warning local residents on its website about retail energy suppliers going door to door with high pressure and misleading offers. The sales behavior has been pretty bad, he said. There's a difference between alternative energy suppliers bearing misleading offers and the alternative energy suppliers municipalities contract with on behalf of their residents, Tess said. In these cases, the cities are doing the research on behalf of their residents on the pricing and terms. We are in a large bidding group with a bunch of other municipalities in Illinois, and we bring our bulk volume to drive down prices and get good terms, Tess said. For instance, our municipal agreement has no cancellation fees, he said. That's aside from driving down the price. We also use agreements that have flat pricing throughout the term, so there are no surprise prices. Since Urbana began offering a municipal electrical aggregation program, its residents who have taken advantage of that have saved a net total $1.3 million. According to the city. Raul said alternative retail energy suppliers who are out making sales pitches typically claim to offer cheaper electricity and gas compared with private utility rates. Yet in the past 5 years, Illinois consumers who signed up with these suppliers paid $870 million more for electricity than if they'd remained with their public utilities, he said. Some tips from Raoul and the City of Urbana for those being solicited by alternative retail energy suppliers. Never show your power bill to the salesperson. Request all offers to be in writing and never enroll on the spot. Ask about any fees, charges, and contract term lengths, and be aware there may be hidden fees. Be cautious about any offer of a lower price than your current electric supplier. It could be an introductory rate that will increase later. Ask which company the salesperson is working for and know the name and rates of the energy supplier delivering your power now. Urbana residents who don't opt out of the city's municipal electric aggregation program are being supplied by the Homefield Energy. In Champaign, the contract supplier is Constellation New Energy. Delivery drivers robbed in separate incidents. Police are looking for two men who robbed a food delivery driver at gunpoint Tuesday night and a third who robbed another woman Saturday. Urbana Police Investigator Doug Pipkins said about 7:25 p.m. Tuesday, a woman working for Jimmy John's was making a delivery in the 800 block of Sunset Drive to an address that turned out to be condominiums with no numbers. She called back the number to the ordering party to get the address clarified when she saw two men heading her direction. Thinking they were the men who had ordered the food, she headed toward them, then saw guns and realized she was about to be robbed. The men made off with the food and her cash, but otherwise did not hurt her. Descriptions of them were incomplete, but one was wearing a light blue puffy jacket and carrying a black handgun. The other was wearing a cream-colored jacket and displaying a brown and silver handgun. Pipkin said on Saturday night another Jimmy John's delivery driver was robbed just after 7 p.m. outside 1 South at 1321 North Lincoln Avenue. He said he has no reason to believe it's related. Pipkin said that woman had just delivered to a regular customer and was returning to her car when she saw four men near it. They moved away, and after she got in, one of them ran up to her car window, put a gun in her face, and demanded her money. Pipkin said she handed it over, they ran off, and she called for help. Anyone with information on either holdup is asked to call Urbana Police at 217-384-2320, or if you wish to remain anonymous, Champaign County Crime Stoppers at 217-373-8477 or 373tips.com or via the free P3 Tips mobile app. Okay, Jim's Dice column. Who is to blame when violence wreaks psychological havoc? When violence breaks out in certain neighborhoods of Chicago, more than just bodies pile up. So too do psychological issues experienced by those who live in those neighborhoods and witness the carnage, particularly young people. Here's how one writer described the consequences of the post-traumatic stress disorder. Disrupted sleep, anxiety, and fear, as well as reduced awareness and difficulty with concentration, thinking, and memory, all of which impair cognitive functioning. Why does this happen? Exposure to gun violence floods a child's body with stress hormones, adrenaline and cortisol, which independently undermine cognitive performance by compromising the function of the prefrontal cortex of the brain, the area of the brain that is most rapidly developing in adolescence. This portion of the brain is responsible for reflective self-regulation and sustained attention, thus inhibiting the child's memory, ability to sustain concentration, and brain development. What's the result? The affected child is disorganized cognitively and emotionally and prone to react with extreme helplessness, confusion, withdrawal, or rage. Those quotes come from a lawsuit filed in Chicago Federal Court, class action litigation, that characterizes the child trauma victims as disabled under the Americans with Disabilities Act and seeks to hold the state of Illinois liable for their psychological injuries. It's a bizarre lawsuit, a long shot at best in terms of its ultimate success in court. But U.S. Judge Joan Goshall recently rejected a motion to dismiss the lawsuit. She speculated the injunctions plaintiffs seek would appreciably diminish the rate of gun violence in some Chicago neighborhoods. Named as defendants in the litigation, which was filed in 2018, are the State of Illinois, the Governor, the Illinois State Police, and the State Police Director. How are state officials responsible for the consequences of inner-city violence to the children who are part of the class action? They didn't prevent the violence that led to the trauma, and the lawsuits ask that they be ordered to take steps to do so. Specifically, the lawsuit alleges the state failed to adopt a reasonable accommodation to the children's disability, a violation of the American with Disabilities Act, as well as the Illinois Civil Rights Act. The reasonable accommodation the defendants seek is the promulgation of rules and regulations on gun sales that would stop the flow of illegal guns into Chicago, where they are often used by criminals to kill and wound their victim and traumatize their victim's friends and family members. The class is so numerous that joinder of all members is impracticable, as gun violence in Chicago is at an epidemic level. Since January 1, 2015, 2,231 persons have been killed in Chicago. 90% died by gunshots. During the same period, 7,971 persons were shot. About 80% of the homicide and shooting victims in Chicago are African American. At least 20% of these shootings involve teenagers or younger children, the lawsuit states. Questions abound about the theory behind the litigation. Law is about rights, wrongs, and remedies, and there are many wrongs for which there are no legal remedies. No doubt children exposed to violence in all its many forms suffer, but are they disabled under the Americans with Disabilities Act, just as individuals in wheelchairs or those suffering from serious diseases or visible physical shortcomings are? Here's another issue the lawsuit raises. Society's goal is to enforce the law and prevent the criminal element from harming their victims. But can that social goal be expanded into a legal duty to protect, making taxpayers financially liable for not preventing someone from being victimized by a criminal? The lawsuit cites a clear problem that fuels the violence. Chicago area gun dealers, all of whom are federally licensed, it contends that 40.4% of crime guns recovered on Chicago streets from 2009 through 2016 were purchased outside the city, principally from several businesses operating in suburbs like Riverdale, Lansing, and Melrose Park. The lawsuit seeks a court order directing the state to impose a long list of rules and regulations aimed at halting the gun flow. They include background checks of store and gun show employees before they handle and sell guns, and video recording of gun purchases to discourage traffickers and buyers from using false identification or buying multiple guns. Action taken on cannabis bonds refugee stance. 2 weeks before recreational marijuana becomes legal statewide, council members signed off on updates to the city's code to bring Champaign's cannabis ordinances in line with Illinois law. "It doesn't make anything unlawful that is not unlawful under the state law," Champaign Assistant City Attorney Catherine Cataldo said. If the city had removed the ordinance, violations related to cannabis penalties, such as for underage use, would have become state criminal offenses. This allows police officers to issue ordinance violations instead, which comes with a fine but no jail time. This provides an alternative civil-only tool to address unlawful behavior instead of the criminal justice system, Cataldo wrote in a report to the council. She compared it to retail theft, which can be treated as a criminal offense, but is often dealt with as an ordinance violation. Last year, the council lowered the cannabis possession fine from $350 to $50. That fine will remain in place, and others were added to match the fines for similar violations related to alcohol. But the council plans to discuss revamping the fine structure earlier next year. Over the past 5 years, the number of cannabis possession violations has dropped significantly, from 194 in 2015 to 42 so far this year. Refugee resettlement. As expected, council members also unanimously gave consent to continue letting refugees resettle in Champaign. Communities had until December 25th to sign a letter of consent to accept refugees following a recent executive order from President Donald Trump. Urbana had already sent its letter, said Lisa Wilson of the East Central Illinois Refugee Mutual Assistance Center. Savoy Village President Joan Dykstra said, "We have not discussed the issue." Money matters. After refinancing loans it took out in 2010, the city expects to save more than $2 million over the next 10 years. The refinanced bonds will have a net interest rate of 1.9%, the city said, taking advantage of recent interest rate reductions. The city issued bonds to pay for stormwater drainage improvements, Finance Director Kay Neese said. We have some area update news. Cooperative rewards teens with donation. A group of teens invested in passing on agriculture-related knowledge to younger students is among the beneficiaries of a donation from Premier Cooperative. The Champaign-based farmer-owned cooperative with 26 locations in central Illinois recently gave $5,000 to the Illinois 4-H Foundation. Of that amount, $3,000 was earmarked for educational programs in Champaign County. Myla Monroe, the youth development educator at the Champaign County Extension Office, said the money stayed locally will help pay for an ag discovery curriculum being used by 4-H teen teachers. It's designed to solve challenges centered around issues like food security, water quality, health and wellness, energy and the environment, all while exploring careers in agriculture, Monroe explained. To do this, we have 4-H teen teachers who act as facilitators in fifth grade classrooms. We go to the high school in Fisher and train the trainer, and the next day they go to the fifth grade. Monroe said, with the gift from Premier, she hopes to expand the 4-H teen teachers program, which has been around in Fisher High School for about 5 years, to the Heritage, Muhammad Seymour, and Rantoul school districts. We have teen teachers teaching about environment and careers in agriculture. The model is getting older teens involved in programming and giving them ownership of a program, she said. The other $2,000 of Premier's donation will go to the Illinois 4-H Partner Program to support programs statewide, such as 4-H teen teachers, Ag in the Classroom, Club Growth, College, and Workplace Readiness. Ford County Circuit Court. Judge to B&B, pay up. A judge on Wednesday ordered a bed and breakfast west of Paxton to comply with penalties imposed for discriminating against a same-sex couple in 2011. The order entered in Ford County Circuit Court by Associate Judge Robert Travers required the Timber Creek Bed and Breakfast to pay $30,000 to the couple, Todd and Mark Walton of Tuscola. Damages for the emotional distress they suffered, along with $50,000 in attorney's fees and $1,218 in costs. The B&B is also required to allow the Waltons access to its facility within 1 year for a ceremony celebrating their civil union, as well as to cease and desist from violating the Illinois Human Rights Act by discriminating on the basis of sexual orientation. Those penalties were originally imposed in 2016 by the Illinois Human Rights Commission, but the B&B refused to comply, resulting in a lawsuit being filed in October of 2018 by the Illinois Attorney General's Office on behalf of the Illinois Department of Human Rights. The lawsuit asked the court to demand the B&B comply with the 2016 order of the commission, which determined the B&B discriminated against the Waltons based on their sexual orientation, when the business's co-owner, Jim Walter, refused to allow their civil union ceremony at his facility. In denying their request, Walter wrote an email to the Waltons, citing various biblical verses and denouncing homosexuality as wrong and unnatural. Piatt County financial picture improves. Bolstered by $380,000 boost in replacement tax proceeds, the lack of large capital projects, careful spending by department heads, and an increase in real estate proceeds, Piatt County government saw a rebound in its finances in 2019. The financial report from Treasurer Debbie Marshall, delivered to the county board, shows that the general fund started the 2019-20 fiscal year with $2,861,351 in fund balances, compared to $2,328,121 the year prior. It's at least a partial rebound from 2017-18, which saw that some fund balance drop by about $1 million. That resulted in budget cuts for the current year, including the layoff of at least 8 county positions. But the year that just ended saw more than a $500,000 swing to the positive in the county general fund. A majority of that came from a rise in corporate personal property replacement tax dollars, which increased by about $380,000 to a total of $2,024,337 for the fiscal year that ended November 30th. The county also took in more property taxes, increasing the bottom line. Former teacher takes spot. Amber Cedar, who was selected to fill the seat Jane Sprandheim vacated at the Thomasboro School Board. Cedar, the mother of Thomasboro third grader Colton and Spectrum preschooler Caitlin, was a preschool teacher for 16 years before becoming a stay-at-home mom. Paxton, yet another meeting of the Ford County Board Zoning Committee resulted in little progress in finalizing proposed changes to the ordinance regulating wind farms. There remain two contentious issues, setbacks from properties containing no primary structure and the required lighting on turbines. Cerro Gordo Elementary Principal Jody Novelli reported that the district raised $3,084 during its Scholastic Book Fair, and what we're going to use that money for is to buy books for elementary kids. This has been Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, December 19th, 2019. Please stay tuned for Part 2.